crucified. I was on the other side of no tomorrow. You walked in and my life began again. Just when I'd spent the last piastre I could buy.
Hello, you're tuned to 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Next up is the Doctor's Inn. And I'd hoped to have a little song there, but there we go. Let's listen to this one.
I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, son, you look older than me, and I'm 71. You're falling apart, you're not living right. I went to the doctor and the doctor said loud, you got to stop hanging out with that old in crowd. Living's a battle and you're losing the fight. I went to the doctor and the doctor said, boy, your body is a temple. It's not a toy. Fill up this here paper cup and give it to the nurse. Don't spill it now. I went to the doctor. Doctor said, friend, this should be the middle, but it could be the end. You better get better, else you're gonna get worse. Oh, I went to the doctor. Oh, I went to the doctor. I went to the doctor and the doctor said, sir, we got back the x-ray. Everything's a blur, but it's all positive. That's what every single test shows. I went to the doctor. Doctor said, kid, it was something that you ate or drank and something that you did. And it's all in your head. It's spreading on down to your toes. All right, let's spread it around a little bit now. Everybody does. Oh, I went to the doctor. I went to the doctor and the doctor said, please get on down to the drugstore and pick up some of these. After that, get on home and get into your bed. I went to the doctor. Doctor said, shucks, that's just about all. You owe me $300 and you can call me in the morning. That is if you're not dead.
All right. Again, this is Ken Logan and you're listening to The Doctor's Inn. The Doctor's Inn is from 6 to 7 p.m. the third Thursday of each month. And on The Doctor's Inn, I like to bring up subjects or information about health or medical conditions or situations. And I would love to have you, the listener, give me some ideas of things that you would like me to bring up, or guests that you would like to have me on relative to health or medical stuff. In order for you to get in touch with me, you could use my email address, and that's klogan.md@yahoo.com. And K is the letter K, so klogan, L-O-G-A-N, md@yahoo.com. I want you to know that the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, or underwriters. And speaking of underwriters, the Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, your state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts have been creating economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and publishing a bi-monthly arts and culture newsletter. To stay in the know or have your event listed, visit Friends of friendsoftheart.com or .net, I would bet. And by the Downtown Business Association, supporting downtown Chico for over 40 years. The Downtown Business Association brings you the Thursday Night Markets, the Friday Night Concert Series, A Taste of Chico, the Christmas Preview, and tree lighting, actually, and Treat Street and more. For a full schedule of what's happening, visit downtownchico.com. And the show today, by the way, if Dr. Redlin is listening to this, I want her to call the phone number to the studio again, or call me on my cell phone, and I will we'll work something out on that. My hope was to have Dr. Sophie Redlin, a primary care physician in London, England, and hopefully, there we go. Dr. Redlin? What happens when you dial that number? Okay. Shoot. I don't know what's going on. Well, I'm talking on my cell phone right now to Dr. Redlin. I want to see if she and I can do a little bit of discussing of some situation that's current in the world. Dr. Redlin, are you okay if I talk to you on my cell and talk to the listeners about what you tell me? I know that sounds a little silly. I can hear you, but I'm not sure they can, so I'm going to have to probably repeat your answer. But so here's the situation. Dr. Redlin is a primary care physician, so that means she, in London, is caring for people with all kinds of multiple arrays of medical conditions and health concerns. She also is a mental health and suicide response trainer in London and has done research in mental health care and availability in not only England, U.S., Japan, and some other countries. What other countries?
Norway.
That was it. I keep forgetting that one. And the reason I wanted to talk with Dr. Redlin currently is my concern, and I think her concern as well, relative to the COVID-19 virus crisis at this point. from a standpoint in my mind, and I think we'll hear what her mind says in a minute, but the emotional and mental health stress or the consequences of this crisis relative to the emotional and mental health consequences is really a concern to me and on into the future. I'm thinking on into the next couple months. And because Dr. Redland has is a primary care physician in London, she also is a knowledgeable in mental health aspects of health and is active in that process. So anyway, Dr. Redland, how is the situation in London currently relative to the coronavirus, healthcare in general, and your practice and all? How's it going? Or give us a little information. Yeah, let me try that. Let's see if that works. Okay, try that.
Does that work?
Let me see. Try that again.
Does that work?
That's pretty good. Go ahead.
Great. Hello. How have you been? Well, I was thinking about how to answer that question because I knew you would ask me. And I would say that things are both chaotic and calm in London. We're currently facing really bad times in terms of this virus, as I'm sure you're aware, as many countries are in the world. There are high numbers of infections, very sadly, high numbers of deaths in hospital and in the community. And yet, there's sort of something about cities or such as London, a huge, bustling city being brought to quiet, being brought to a standstill, roads completely empty, parks emptier than they have been, everyone at home. That does create this weird sort of eerie sense of calm. And I think those two contrasting elements are also true of people's emotions. So watching the news is very stressing, a lot of disturbing stories on the news. And yet there's also, I feel, this sense of detachment that because people are very isolated at home, unless it's unfortunately affected you personally so far, there is actually the sense of this is happening somewhere far away and not in your neighbourhood. So it's very strange. And I think in primary care at the moment, again, it's either very chaotic and busy. We're obviously talking in a lot of people who are suffering with the symptoms of COVID-19 and trying to manage that. And on the other hand, we're very restricted in how we can deliver other services at the moment. We don't have access to hospital care for anything else, understandably. So again, there's these moments of really quiet days in office, and then flurries of phone calls with people worried about what's going on. But yeah, I would say it's a mixed emotions at the moment.
Yes, and in your in the area that you live, so everyone is in a kind of a lockdown as well, just like we are here in California. That is essentially staying at home. Is that kind of the situation you have over there in London?
It is. Yeah. So we're completing our third week of lockdown.
Okay.
So everyone at home, apart from essential workers. Which, yeah, feels very strange.
Right, right. And I know this sounds like a small thing potentially, but the issue of wearing masks, is that something that generally the people on the streets in London are doing?
It is. It's fairly common to see masks
okay.
these days. our government has yet to endorse that as a sort of public health advice, unlike the state. So, you know, it's not sort of essential, but yeah, there are a lot of people trying to protect themselves in that way.
Gotcha. And and then now we go, we kind of move into the idea, you know, not only do I, well, let me give you an example. I had a patient on the phone this morning, a young man with type 1 diabetes. And the reason I was dealing with him on the phone, it wasn't a work day for me today, but I was dealing with him on the phone because of anxiety. And this is a young man who has anxiety, underlying anxiety anyway, does pretty well with it, and with type 1 diabetes, that's a 24/7 kind of medical condition. So he has that to be anxious about. But now with the lockdown, and this is a young man, you know, somebody who's usually out and about, and a young man, and he is with a background of anxiety. So now he's having anxiousness, anxiety, and panic attacks, and it just seemed okay. He's got a stressful life because of diabetes and a young man, and then now, bang, he's scared. He's scared too about the virus. He's scared about the virus. He's in home now instead of out and about. So it's a worrisome combination of events. And how do you?
Yes.
Are you seeing that kind of thing, or are you with me this is for mental health condition and emotional states? This is this brings about more events, I would say. Mental health events.
Absolutely, yeah. As you say, I think we're seeing a lot of people who have have experienced periods of heightened anxiety and low mood in the past, who are certainly having recurrences of those issues, and also seeing it in people who haven't.
Right.
I think people are not used to this sort of constant state of uncertainty, of fear, as you say, completely life-changing situations of being under lock and key at home, especially for people perhaps on their own who are feeling very isolated. And it's a huge problem. And as you said at the beginning, I think that actually the real fallout of this is going to be, you know, months and months and years into the future.
Yeah. Yeah, the outcome of, I mean, the, and this itself, the event itself, you know, we talked to, I talked to other people, and here the governor of the state of California talking about, our governor of California, I think, is doing a very good job. But for instance, to me, yeah, I think about the emotional, trials and tribulations of our day, and I think about the fear of the virus. That's one thing. The stay-at-homeness that we have to do to try to control this virus, that weighs on people's emotions. I'm going to say this, and by the way, I already said that the opinions voiced in this program don't necessarily reflect the views of the opinions of KZFR. It's volunteers, underwriter, or board of directors. But our federal government, if I just have a feeling that there's some distrust relative to the federal government, relative to leadership in this pandemic and how it's going to affect us all and how it is affecting us all. So there's another point of what I feel is another risk. Another thing that helps bring out or leads to bringing out the emotional problems and mental health issues. So, unfortunately, I know in England your Boris Johnson was in the hospital for a while, but he's doing better now, right?
He is, yeah. So he's out of hospital and recovering, I believe.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean, though, about when there's a crisis? It's kind of nice to have a leader in our government that is solid and feel like they have your back and they're you really trust what they're doing. And I just have to say, I see that in our country, I see that as part of the unsettledness and maybe part of the fear that's present and can lead to things, emotional instability in our people, in the people, in mental conditions. That's how I see it. How about I don't want to dig any deeper, but do you relative to politics, but do you feel in England do you feel trust in your government is doing well through this crisis for the people? Maybe that's the wrong question to ask you, Doctor.
No, it's fine. I think it's the issue, yeah. Because, as you say, as I said, when things are so uncertain and this is so unprecedented, you know, it's a new virus, it's a new situation, it affects the whole world. We're all living a bit in a movie. We want a strong leader at the front of it. And I agree with you. I think, and it's the same for the UK, I think many years of the public often feeling failed by the government, not listened to the government. I won't go on about Brexit, but obviously there's been a lot of disparate views within the country, and a lot of divide.
So
when we fell into this crisis, absolutely, I don't think it was going into it with a solid belief in who was leading us for many people. I don't know, I'm sort of undecided really as to, there are camps of people who want to blame the government already that they haven't done things correctly.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who are more sympathetic that no one really knows what we're doing and we're just trying our best. My overriding feeling is, I suppose, I wish that there was a little bit more honesty for perhaps some mistakes that have been made, some delays in things happening. I actually think the public would respect that more, and I think a lot of the anger in the UK at the moment is a feeling that we're often being blown off, really. Lines are being fed to keep people happy, and especially among doctors who are very doctors and nurses, healthcare workers, who are very much sort of in the thick of it. There does seem to be this lack of continuity between what they see as reality and what is being presented in the daily press conference.
I could understand how that could be problematic. Speaking of the healthcare providers and nurses and people on the front line, how is it in England, in London, relative to the personal protective equipment for the healthcare workers? Do you feel like, for instance, are there enough masks and gowns and facial shields and that kind of thing in your hospitals? Or I will tell you, in our country, there's been some battles and fights to get that kind of gear available.
Yeah, absolutely. We've had very similar problems. And I think similarly to the US, it's been presented by our leadership as now not a problem. Things are fine. We've got everyone well stocked. And again, there's many stories from the front line, in inverted commas, but that is not the case. My personal experience is that we have been issued with PPE in practice. Some of it is pretty inadequate for the task, I'll say, and I've certainly heard plenty of stories from colleagues in hospital that things are running low and they're anxious. And I think this is an important point, because this is something that is creating great anxiety for both professionals and patients, members of the public, I think, that people feel the country is not prepared. It undermines this idea that we're going to get through it. And for people working on the front line, that sort of feeling of we're here just for the sacrificing, you know, they feel undervalued, they feel unsafe. So I think it's been a huge problem, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds similar to here in the United States. How about COVID 19 testing supplies? Is testing something that is ubiquitously available, or is it not? I mean, do you have plenty of testing ability in London?
No, is the short answer to that question.
That's the short answer there.
The long answer is that, I mean, personally, I feel testing is where we perhaps could be doing more. I obviously, the whole situation, I only know what I hear on the ground, but then what I hear from leadership as well. It seems very, very slow here, and I think realistically increased testing, contact tracing is one of our ways out of this current state of affairs in terms of loosening restrictions. I don't know, you know, I'm not saying that would take us back to normal life at all. That's a long way coming, I think. But I think, you know, yeah, the lack of testing has been very frustrating. And again, circling back to mental health and our discussion around that, again, this creates anxiety that people are often having cough, cold, fevers, terrified by it, unsure whether they've had the illness, whether they're putting others at risk, perhaps if they're living with family members. Again, professionals working on the front line are still struggling to get testing. Yeah, testing and PPE for us seems to be the main two issues, and it's something that baffles me, really. I'm not sure, like, we've not done better at that.
Right, that sounds similar to here in the United States. I wish, I'm hoping that it will soon improve, but, and it's a missing piece for getting out of this hole that we're in relative to infectivity and getting us back. If there's any way, the sooner we get plenty of testing available, that will help us get us out of the lockdown element of this in the near future, I hope. Hey, I tell you what, let's take a little minute or two of break. And Dr. Redlin, are you okay to hang on the line a minute? I mean, some more?
Yes, of course.
Okay, let me attempt to put a song on here. And we'll take a little break.
Okay. Dr. Redland, are you there?
I'm here.
Excellent. Okay. So you and I were just talking about a couple things. Number one is, again, we were talking about the mental health issues related to this current crisis. But we were also talking about healthcare availability and the healthcare system difference from England versus the United States. And with respect to that, availability for healthcare for everyone in a country with national health care, such as England, versus our country, United States, that we have, 34 million at least people who don't have health care insurance and therefore decreased availability. And then there's the issue that you and I were just briefly talking about. Hey, I'm gonna shut up in a minute and have you talk, but let me just lay this out. Laying out the other piece of this information about a sizable percentage of the deaths in especially the large cities like New York in our country are in the what some people such as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who's in the House of Representatives representing the Bronx area of New York City, that high percentage of the deaths are in the people who are, quote-unquote, socially predisposed, end of quote. In other words, in poverty and are in living in parts of the country or parts of the city, in this case, New York, that is environmentally not as healthy a place and their food intake is not as robust, and therefore their immune system and their ability to fight disease, including infections, is potentially limited to a degree. And I know that we're going to be all seeing this kind of thing in the numbers in the months to come, but in England, you have a national health system. So can you tell us how healthcare is in England and compare that to the United States that you've seen? Because you have been in the United States.
Of course, yeah. We talked about it a lot, didn't we, when
yes.
I first met you 4 years ago. And I suppose just to tell the audience a bit, I met you at your at the Shalom Free Clinic. And I was spending time in looking at the impact of community on mental health, and particularly in the States, looking at how a private, more financially driven health system influences access to mental health care, management of mental health care. We talked a lot about the benefits of the NHS, of a sort of universal system. And absolutely, it's a system I really believe in. It's something like COVID-19 really shows the best and worst of a system like the NHS. So where it differs to the States is that obviously it's much more standardized at the moment. So as I explained before, every person in the UK is eligible to have a GP. It's a sort of right here. The system of speaking to your GP, getting help, is pretty much the same for everybody.
So in many ways, GP as in your general practitioner, your primary care provider.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Sorry. Uh-huh.
Yeah, no problem.
I should have said that. Yeah, your provider. And, you know, I couldn't believe it when coming to the States that for many people, even that is very difficult. It's not an assumed right that you automatically get a provider. So for general healthcare and in kind of peacetime, the NHS in general works well.
And
in crisis time.
And Dr. Redland, I'm sorry, NHS stands for what?
The National Health Service.
So the National Health Service, your universal health care system, National Health Service in England. Okay, thank you. Continue, please.
Yeah, no problem. In this kind of crisis, we sort of see the downside of it. So cracks begin to very quickly you know, because it's such a stressed and sort of squeezed system already. So what we're seeing, for example, in terms of using mental health as an example, as a sort of my interest, mental health services have closed down in my area due to, you know, not wanting to see patients with coronavirus face-to-face, etc. Those services were already very limited. It's one of the big problems here, which is why I've done a lot of the research and work I've done, is that we don't have a robust mental health system. It's not a priority in the UK in terms of funding. So actually the access I have on an ordinary day to things like therapy, psychiatry, is very small. And now within this crisis, when all this energy has to go towards fighting COVID-19, which is understandable, things like that are taken off the table. So we're seeing a lot of people in a very bad way in terms of that. There's also, in terms of what you were saying about how this illness is going to unfortunately impact people, perhaps of a lower socioeconomic status, etc., more. Yes, that's true, and that's still going to be the case in the UK, unfortunately. So even though there is this universal access to healthcare, there's obviously still going to be these issues, as you say, around people living in poverty who, as you say, don't have access to healthy food, outdoor space, financial security, and so have possibly neglected health and will be impacted more physically. Also, definitely in terms of mental health, there are already numerous problems there, perhaps substance abuse, perhaps illness issues. And so this is just going to yet be one more thing. I actually work in a very wealthy part of London, normally, and I would say that for the majority of my patients, they're doing pretty well in this. You know, a lot of them have second homes, they are able to isolate in fairly nice places, they've got family, a lot of them have access to private healthcare as well. So in the UK, there is the option to pay for sort of extra services, if you like, to see people quicker. So looking at that picture, it sort of all looks fine, but I know sort of 10 minutes down the road on a sort of what we call a council estate, so government housing, the situation would be very different. So I think we are going to see those disparities in the care that people get, but I don't think to the extent of the state. And as I said to you 4 years ago, I was blown away by in the state the lack of access to care depending on your insurance situation.
Yes, and you know, like you said, I'm realizing too, of course, like you said, this coronavirus, this COVID virus crisis is overburdening any healthcare system, no matter where it is, no matter what country it is in. It's just, how could it not, huh? It's unfortunate. Yeah. I've heard it said, similar to what you have said, that the National Health Service in Britain is the money being put into that, more money. It would be nice if more money was put into that National Health Service. National Health Service, and is this a time when we're really going to see the outcome of that kind of phenomenon, where there's not enough money being put into it? When it's being over.
Definitely, yeah. I think this situation highlights that our health service sort of stumbles on, tries its best, and as I say, the ethos behind it, the belief in it, belief of most of the people who work in it is, in my opinion, amazing, and I I'm very proud to be a part of it. But this kind of crisis highlights what happens when that care isn't there. So as I say, the services that we're used to getting, even if they're not quite as robust in other countries, but because they're available to everyone, we rely on them. As soon as this sort of thing happens and we don't have them anymore, we very quickly begin to see the fallout of that. So yes, I think it is going to show that we do need better funding, but the solutions for that are very complex.
Yes.
Something that hasn't quite been solved. Yeah.
Yeah, and this crisis won't solve that. Although, just like in this country, how the crisis is showing us the disparity in healthcare availability in the different elements of our population, it's really putting it in front of our face. Well, this crisis one positive outcome might be that in England, the funding issue, it's being more fervently put right in front of your faces now as well. Some of the discrepancies, some of the poorly funded areas. Well, like, for instance, mental health. That just, when you said that just, wow. That's unfortunate, isn't it? Especially during this time. This is a time when, of course, like we've been saying, mental health needs are going to be higher. And to think that that's area of funding that is that is an area of healthcare that is poorly funded is unfortunate. I don't think it's just in England.
Yeah.
It's the United States as well in that realm.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember seeing that very much at the Shalom Clinic with you. My hope, a mistake way back, you know, before the COVID-19 crisis, my hope for a long time has been that in terms of mental health, emotional health, is that we can really move some of that care from, you know, a health system, a medical system, a medical agenda, to more of a community-orientated agenda. You know, as we've discussed before, a lot of the problems I see in practice, while distressing for the people, are very much to do with their social situation, things going on at home, perhaps people are lonely, isolated, you know, significant issues, but issues aren't often best served in the consultation room, one-on-one with a primary care provider, or even indeed with a psychiatrist if we have that availability. So my wish for some time has been to promote and explore and encourage practices that empower communities to come together and support each other. And I suppose my optimistic hope for all of this in this dire circumstances, something that might come out of it, would be that. So we are seeing a rise in volunteers, this intergeneration mixing in terms of people supporting elderly people within the communities. And I'm trying to do that personally in terms of offering kind of online support to different groups, in the hope that people come to realize that actually the potential within community to support each other is very strong. And the way I really see the National Health Service surviving is less about more money being pumped in, although that wouldn't hurt, but it's more about changing our mindset on how we use it and why we need to access and use it. And I just feel there is so much space in the rest of the world, in our communities, in our schools, our elderly care homes, our families. There's so much space there for peer support, for education, for mentoring. And I suppose, yeah, one of my hopes, if anything, from this might be that people begin to see that.
And, you know, like you said, the community responses to this virus are what are most impressive throughout the world, actually. So a community-oriented healthcare system. That's interesting to hear that. And I'm wondering, I'm trying to envision how that would sort out logistically. But I like the idea. You know what it made me think of when you start talking about community-oriented healthcare in general and utilizing various human resources in the community that maybe aren't being utilized currently even. And it made me think of Cuba, healthcare in Cuba. I don't know why it made me think that. I just get this feeling that that's somewhat how the healthcare in the communities in Cuba is set up, rather very community oriented. That's the flavor I get. Are you familiar with that at all?
So I don't know a huge amount about Cuba, other than I've heard that as well, and I'd be really interested actually in reading more about their health system.
Yeah, it might be something, a place where we could learn from them. That and other areas of healthcare, possibly besides their community orientation. Wow.
Definitely. I mean, I'll give a quick shout out, if it's all right, to time I spent in Alaska in the summer. I think I'd mentioned briefly to you, Ken, spending a couple of months with indigenous populations in the state last summer, really looking at this sort of idea of how a community can be involved with health, and particularly how cultural practices influence perceptions of mental health and management. I was looking at talking circles and things particularly. But I'll just give a shout out to the South Central Foundation in Anchorage in Alaska that really, I mean, epitomize what we're talking about. They're a native Alaskan health service that has over the 20 years completely changed the way that they work, and very much work in partnership with the local community, with the elders. And, you know, I mean, all I need to say is that they've won the kind of worldwide health system award twice.
Oh.
It's the most impressive thing I've ever seen in terms of healthcare. And it's been a long journey for them. But, yeah, as you say, looking at those kind of systems around the world, I think we've got a lot to learn from them.
Yes. Can you say again the name of that entity, that healthcare?
Yeah, so it's South Central Foundation in Anchorage.
South Central Foundation in Anchorage.
Yeah.
All right. So a person could probably look that up online, huh?
One could. And they've got some great videos online. That sort of explains their story, what they do, what they're about. And, they're a great team. They're a great team.
Mm-hmm. Hey, when the work that you're currently doing, you're doing primary care, is that correct?
Yeah, so I do a mixture of primary care, obviously at the moment, mostly primary care. I also do mental health teaching, as you said. So that's about teaching other providers, other GPs, about how we can be more mentally health aware and how we can better assess and support people who are having suicidal thoughts. Really passionate about that. I love that as a role.
All right.
So, but basically mostly primary care, yeah.
Did that work? Thank you, Dr. Redland. I was letting somebody in to the building.
No,
sorry.
You told me to keep talking.
Yes, I did. Have to do a variety of things here at this table. let me think for a minute. I'm going to say thank you very much. And tell us anything else you want to tell us about yourself or what you're doing there in London or about mental health and the COVID crisis?
Thank you for having me. I think that for me it's been, you know, it's a difficult time for all of us, but it's also a time for change, which is exciting. And I personally have been drawing on a lot of the things I've learned over the last few years, dating back to when I met you and other doctors during that year of research, and then most recently, as I say, time spent in the States with Indigenous people, using a lot of techniques that I've learned to try and set things up and get things going in the community in the absence of that happening anywhere else. And it's hopeful and it's promising. So I think the message to people is just to keep going, think outside the box, and we'll get through this.
We'll get through this. We'll get through this. We're all in the same boat. We'll get through it together, huh?
Absolutely.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Redlin. Maybe I'll have you on again sometime. You never know if you're game.
That would be great.
And maybe it'd be a time when I can get the phone to work correctly. You never know. All right.
Technology in the time of COVID.
Yeah. All right. Thanks again, Dr. Redlin. I'll hang up with you now.
Okay. All right. No problem. Take care.
Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So that was Dr. Sophie Redlin from London. Again, I know her from the time she spent in the United States, including that in Chico, doing some of her work and studies on mental health care and availability and the comparison in such in different communities, different countries, actually. And again, part of what we were talking about had to do with the issue of the emotionalness and the mental health strain that this COVID virus crisis has put upon the world and on all of us. And I want to say, as a family practice physician, to understand that it's likely that we're all going to have feel some of the stresses that come about that are related to this crisis, and know that it's okay. And like Dr. Redlin said, we're going to get through this. It's all right. But understand that to take advantage of your loved ones, and in other words, talk to your friends and your relatives by phone, or if you're there with them in person. But don't forget telephone and Zooming on the internet. Remember to get out and do some walking outside, not with other people. I mean, not around where there are other people, but stay active. Don't sit all the time at home. Be up and about in a safe way, and eat wisely. And drink fluids, of course, wisely. Stay healthy. That's all. All of that is healthy for not only your sense of well-being, but also for your physical health and your immune system. Okay. Well, The Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Zeppelin Works, repairing Volkswagen, BMW, Porsche, Audi, Volvo, and Mercedes since 1981. The Zeppelin Works services any European automotive problem or maintenance. For more information, you can call 893-0757. Or on the internet at zeppelinworks.com. And the Doctor's Inn is made possible also by Chico Paper Company in downtown Chico for over 40 years, located at 4th and Broadway. Chico Paper Company features an on-site custom framing studio and art gallery showing local and regional artists. Chico Paper Company can be reached at 891-0900 or at chicopapercompany.com. The opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, or underwriters. I tell you what,
Now, stay tuned for Beatle Nation. I'm going to put a little song on here for you, I hope. Let's see if I can do that.
Just when I'd spent the last piastre I could buy.